can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Okay, Don, now...
I'd like to thank you.
Go ahead, Don.
For telling me who the guest was today.
Well, I'm about to...
He's been a bit distracted.
I've been a bit distracted, but...
You could get on the phone.
Yeah, it's true, but he normally tells you, so I forgot, I'm sorry.
So the guest is sitting opposite...
What am I going to ask him?
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about.
The guest is sitting opposite you and me and us, and I'm about to introduce him,
Don. Actually, sorry, can I just say something? You're better when you haven't prepared, can I tell you? Because you don't go to the Wikipedia and get it all wrong.
I never consult the Wikipedia like he does. There's nothing original comes out of his mouth. He's a plagiarist.
At this stage, the guest is looking at us wondering why he's come.
What am I doing here?
I'm going to start this again. Our guest today is here for two reasons. He's been part of the AFL system as a player, an administrator and an official. And now he's moved on to a different vocation. We're going to speak to him about that. But he is has a brother who is in the media, and he has a father who I think, I stand corrected, in a Sheffield Shield game took all 10 wickets in an innings. I see him nodding, but I will now with... out any further, he was the CEO of the Richmond Football Club. He was the AFL umpires.
Coaches.
He's been everywhere.
He's ditched all that, or he's not.
There goes his umpiring questions.
He's not. No, I'm going to go. See, I'm umpiring. He's ditched all that and he's moving into another field. He's now part of the 11 Health.
11.
L-E-V-I-N. 11 Health. I probably get this. It's a medical marijuana company.
Is that just the front?
What, for drugs? Don, don't be a clown, please. This is Mark Brayshaw. Welcome him and ask him your first question, please.
Mark, the pants you're wearing.
Thank you, Mark, for coming.
Yeah, you might as well.
Mark, the pants you're wearing, they're a moleskin.
Yep.
Who made them?
Ah, now we're into it, mate. And so Mr. I'm glad Williams. You came for this.
R.M. Williams.
R.M. Williams, yeah. Look, they're the most comfortable. They're very old. They don't make these ones with the buttons any longer. And I don't know why, but I put them on and I just feel good. I'm an R.M. Williams man whenever I can be. Having said that, they're bloody expensive, the shoes and so forth. So I keep an eye out in the bargain barrel every now and again. But I was really pleased that a billionaire in Andrew Forrest found a few shekels in his, in his cigarette tray, and bought the company, and has given it an Australian flavour. So yeah, I'm an R.M.
Well, I hope it goes back to having an Australian flavour, because it used to be made in Prospect in South Australia. The boots were there. The moleskins that you've got on, you just cannot find them now with the quality that used to be made. So. There is my opening question, Mark. Well, I've got nothing else to talk about.
Right, good. So Mark is here for directly, the indirect part of his career is football, which we can get into and all that. But I became associated with Mark because I was asked about his medical marijuana company, which he's setting up. If I get any of this wrong, mate, just chip in. And I said, well, what does it do? He said, have you got any injuries from football? And I said, have I got any? Oh, I've just got one particular injury, which is giving me a lot of trouble. It's an ankle and all that. And he said, well, maybe you'd like to go on the trial program of trying medical marijuana. It's a whole different aspect of treating injuries and pain. And I said, I accepted that. And I am starting... tomorrow, as it turns out, I've got the prescription, which comes from Western Australia, the actual medical marijuana. But Mark, before I completely not describe this as it should be, tell me why you got out of the AFL system to start this. Why did you, please, if I've made a mess of all that?
Thank you. Thanks, Sam. Look, I have finished 6 years at the Coaches Association, and I'd been around the game for a while. I was on the board at North for 8 years prior to then, and my brother and I invested in this company, Levin Health, during lockdown. James, yep. And you know, for those who don't know what it was like last year, you'd locked in, and therefore I read lots and watched all sorts of videos and YouTubes and sort of investigated the medicinal cannabis sector. And I was intrigued at it having been around for thousands of years in the ancient times, helping all sorts of ailments. If you Google or YouTube medicinal cannabis, you'll quickly see some videos with little autistic children getting treated in a manner that, you know, really stops you in your tracks. So that caught my eye. The people associated with the company are guys I trust. I spoke to my old North Melbourne doctor, Dr. Harry Unglick, and said to him, what does the medical profession think about medicinal cannabis, Harry? And Harry's answer was, huge potential but not enough research. And again, you watch these videos and everyone says, well, it looks good, but the medical people want the science. So the company, Levin Health, and I'm its inaugural CEO, is about to do a clinical trial at La Trobe Uni with Peter Bruckner. And Peter Bruckner is well known to any sport. You know, he's a club doctor at Melbourne, and my son is a player at Melbourne, and he's been involved in all sorts of national sporting teams, cricket, basketball, swimming, Liverpool for a little while. So he's got a long CV in sport. He's the principal investigator, and we are about to embark on what will be an 18-month. Now, they call these placebo-controlled, randomised, double-blind, like the top-quality trials, at the end of which, if it proves the efficacy of cannabis and safety, that will be a monumental step forward for
us. So you say placebo trials, so medical marijuana is an essence or a syrup or something?
Well, it comes in all sorts of forms, but at the moment it's typically a drip under your tongue.
So you give some people a drip under your tongue, which might be honey, and some people a medical marijuana, and see if they can tell, is that the placebo effect of it, or something.
That's right. And neither the doctor nor the patient will know who's got it. That's the double blind part of it. The trial will be run by La Trobe. It's 114 participants. Good time to be doing a trial because the university sector's on its knees after COVID. So, you know, we were fortunate in that bit of timing, and that'll start any month, any day now.
So is Sam on it proper, or is he part of the trial?
That's the science of rigour. What Sam's doing is an early access program we're running for former athletes around the country. And there's nothing placebo about it. Sam and the others go to see a GP. If the GP thinks it's appropriate, then Sam will be prescribed medicinal cannabis. It's a complicated process because there's about 190 options and only a couple of them have been approved. So almost certainly the GP will prescribe something that requires special access, which is a bit of rigmarole because it's not yet approved. You'll get it, and hopefully it works.
Can I ask you a question? Because I've also investigated medical marijuana, but some GPs or some doctors will not prescribe it.
Yep.
So do you have to go to a doctor who is that way inclined? And I should imagine there'd be very few of them.
It's a good question, Don. There are, roughly speaking, 10% of GPs that are pro medicinal cannabis, 10% that are anti, and then it's 80% that are in the middle who don't really have a feel for it. And that's because it's not yet approved and there's not the science. And so that's why I, in answer to your question, I got involved on the basis that I thought, well, the science is going to give the rigour to shift doctors. It's not for everybody. That's another thing. You know, you might find, Sam, that it doesn't work. And there are side effects in some cases.
So there could be a placebo effect.
Sometimes, yeah. And that's true of look, I'm not a scientist. That's the other thing I need to say. But I've learnt rapidly that medicine doesn't work for everybody. And in the case of medicinal cannabis, it certainly doesn't work for everybody. But there's millennia, thousands of years of anecdotal evidence to suggest it. And I'm going to give you one example. An old friend of mine, a family friend in WA, rang me to say that I hear you've got this new job. She's in her late 70s and a very, very straight lady, and sort of said, listen, it's changed my life. I've had couple of surgeries. I don't want to do any more of those. I don't like opioids. I don't want to get addicted to non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. The pain is making my life a misery. And my GP suggested I try medicinal cannabis, and it's made a big difference to my life. Now, you know, I think in 10 years' time, it'll be much more mainstream. I think the regulations will have settled down, and there'll be more people like her, there'll be clinical data and more robust, rigorous science. So without it, it's stalled at the moment.
Could I ask you some practical questions? Because I looked into doing this years ago.
You don't have to nominate that you're going to ask him questions. You just ask him. just say...
Oh, shit.
And you don't need to do that.
I looked at growing it
yep.
years ago, but didn't go any further, just the initial. How do you go about growing it? Do I envisage putting a security fence around a plot? I thought there'd have to be hot very hot. No, well, I only just looked at it and I thought, geez, which way? Because there was nothing, there weren't any rules or anything at that stage. So is it grown locally? How do you grow it? How do you process it? And do you have to be licensed, or the grower have to be licensed to do all of this type of thing?
Yes, short answer is yes, you need a license. The long answer is there are now quite a few. So our business started with a farm and a license.
Whereabouts?
In Gippsland.
And how many acres?
Oh, that's a good question.
And what type of return do you get? See, these are the things. And no one could give me all these answers. So, you know, is it a 10-acre plot that you get a return on?
How about you let him ask one of the eight questions you've asked him?
So I don't know the detail of this because COVID came and put a stop on things and then the market evolved. So, for example, you mentioned hothouses. Initially, it was thought that we needed a hothouse. Subsequently, the regulations have changed and you don't. Australia's a pretty good place to grow and there are lots of other cultivators around the country. So we have put a pause on our cultivation plans in the light of the fact that there are lots of other suppliers out there.
Lots of other
cultivators, growers. And it's a pretty... look.
It's already being done there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely. So you grow it, then there's the cultivators, and then there are the manufacturers, there's a couple of those, and then there are the distributors, and we are at that end of the supply chain.
So what are you harvesting the top of the bush, the whole bush, and do you put it through a press?
I don't know the answer to that. Okay. That's a science that I'm...
And what do you get?
Done.
You get a liquid out of it, do you? You get a liquid?
Yes, you get, in Sam's case, and at the moment everybody... So you can vaporise it, or you can get it in flower form, or... the moment in liquids. The next step that everybody's looking for are gels and cream, but for the time being the majority of it is drops under the tongue.
So Don, when you started off and asking about his Williams, what are they called?
R.M. Williams Moleskins.
What is he called? What are they? R.M. Williams Moleskins, Don. And you said, that's me, I've got no more questions. You got your eye in suddenly. You got any more questions yet? Now, let me ask you one. Why is it different to opioids? Why is it different? Because you see over in America, they've got medical marijuana and it's just a front for people going in and buying joints.
Yep.
But you don't smoke your product?
No. It's...
And there is a component, surely, of the thing that makes you high and therefore I'm not sure if you can drive a car...
Okay,
let
me answer that. So there's two compounds, THC and CBD. The THC is the hallucinogenic. The CBD is not. So there are roughly three products on the market. CBD only / strong, THC only, and then the balance. And at the moment we have a balanced product. Now the thinking is... that the CBD is more effective with a little bit of THC in it, but there are, for the time being, you can't drive at the moment with any THC in your body in this country. And that's a real problem because the CBD only is a fraction. So, for example, if we have a couple of beers, you can drive and you are under 0.05 and that's a tolerable level of intoxication. But in the case of medicinal cannabis,
there's
zero tolerance.
Yes.
If you've got any THC,
that's interesting.
In parts of the country, you're in risk of getting a criminal record. Now in Victoria, there's a bipartisan movement to amend the Road Safety Act. But the problem is, the roadside police don't understand, are not equipped yet with the ability to differentiate somebody that's using it recreationally and shouldn't, and is, you know, impaired versus somebody that is, you know, has a bad back and is getting it because his GP thinks it's prescribed. So there seems to be momentum to make that change, but the equipment is a bit of a challenge. In some cases, you know, the police find themselves in a difficult position, and there's been evidence, I think, in South Australia that a magistrate threw it out because it was a technicality. I mentioned earlier, in 10 years, I think this sector is likely to change, and that'll be one of the changes.
Couldn't the doctor write a reference that you'd carry on you?
Yep. The problem is the cops are saying we can't differentiate between somebody's got a reference.
Or recreationally.
Has taken it recreationally. That's a work in progress that I'm anticipating to be resolved in the near term here.
So what does it actually work on, the marijuana? Does it work on the nerves, or does it work on the inflammation that is caused by injury in the body? Like an opiate works, I think, well, on the nerves, whereas an anti-inflammatory...
I don't know the answer to that, other than the fact that our niche is chronic non-cancer pain.
And non-cancer
pain, chronic non-cancer pain. Hips, musculoskeletal joints, elbows, hips and ankles. And there are people, you don't have to be, as a risk of stating the obvious, you don't have to be a 300 game, you know, AFL, VFL ruckman to have sore hips and knees and ankles. And we're all living older. They're talking about, there's an interesting expression, they're using the word health span instead of lifespan. So your lifespan extends to your 80s, but a lot of people get in their 80s and think it's bloody terrible because I'm stiff and sore and I've got all the hips and joints. And what we're saying is, for some people, it's a worthy question to ask your GP, because it's a plan B that you know, opioids and other solutions are you know, you ought to consider.
Mark, Sam mentioned the US a second ago and about, you know, with the decriminalisation of marijuana.
Yep.
And you see now in the press there's celebrities that have become, you know, gazillionaires on the back of it. Are you positioned, if that happened here, that you could then take advantage of that market as well?
Okay, so the US market's really interesting. There's a federal prohibition on cannabis in the US at a federal level. And what that means is, amongst other things, the universities that are normally doing all the research are not able, on the one hand, to get funding from the feds and do any medical cannabis research. So there's a void. And Canada, Israel and Australia are the ones that seem to be filling that void. There's not much research done, and because the biggest engine room is the US, are not able to. Now, there's a bit of thought that, given the federal change of government over there, those rules might relax. But for the time being, the energy is in Canada and Australia and Israel, because it's there's at a state, various of the states have relaxed the rules, but at the federal level there's this, I think it's called the Harrison Act, which prohibits... any transactions. And so we're sort of, our trial will be one of its kind, and we're going to think about doing one or two more before those rules, before the Americans catch up.
And one of the things that people like Don and I and older people have sleep deprivation, and I'm told it's very good for getting you a reasonable night's sleep because of the, I suppose, the hallucinatory effect. Is that not right, or what makes you sleep well with it?
Once again, I'm not a scientist, and I really don't know this, but anecdotally what I hear is if you've got something that's really, really painful and you roll over at night and you wake. Now, I don't have this, by the way, which everybody finds quite funny. I've joined the dots between a chronically sore shoulder and the inability to get a good night's sleep. And some of the people, in some cases that I've heard of, have said, bloody hell, my pain's gone, and for the first time in a long while, I'm getting a really good night's sleep. So this program that you're involved in, Sam, the athlete care program, is something that we're doing with a company called the Emerald Clinics. There's about 10 of them around the country. They are going to aggregate all your data and everybody else that we get to do, and at Christmas time or thereabouts, we'll have a view as to exactly whether it's working.
How long does it start to take effect? Say, in his case, when will he start to see an effect?
Okay, so everybody's different, but the rule of thumb is low and slow. So low dosage and slow build up. So, and this is a bit of a problem, again, I'm reading about. A lot of the patients go, look, this hasn't worked. I can't be bothered anymore. And so, you know, you
increase the dose.
Exactly, yeah. And so the message that I hear from people around is that In some cases, it happens overnight, but in most cases, because of the low and slow philosophy of the GPs, it can take a few weeks to kick in. And then apparently when it does, you've landed at your right point.
Well, I could be the actual on-the-spot guinea pig, because we can give updates on a weekly basis. We can start off with saying, how are you feeling? I'm saying, wow, I'm great.
Well, it's funny you say that, Sam, because I haven't got authority to say his name, but a very, 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 very high-profile AFL player.
Yes, I know who you're speaking about. I won't say his name either.
Yeah, he is, and the lady that I mentioned earlier, the old lady from WA, they're very, very, very happy to tell the story because it has fixed a problem for them.
Former AFL player.
Star. We won't mention his name.
Okay. Yeah.
And he can't help himself. He's just so, the pain is gone. He talks about it to the point where you want to move on to another subject. So,
possibly, is it addictive?
No, not that we know of. But again, the research will have to determine that. And that's where that's why you mentioned earlier some of the medical profession are uncomfortable with it until they get robust data and science to confirm safety and efficacy and addiction.
Not because it might do them out of business.
Well, not really. I mean, you know, you've been into the GP, you have a consultation, they get paid for that, and so it's our stuff is only via a GP if the GP thinks it's a good idea for you, and as you mentioned, not a lot of them don't at the moment.
It's pretty expensive, isn't it?
Yeah. So you can't get. It's not on the PBS, pharmaceutical benefit scheme. So the going rate is roughly $10 a day. So yes, it's
for a drop.
Everybody has different drops, but the rough rule of thumb is $10 a day.
So is it just one drop under your tongue a day, or three times a day?
Sometimes it's. I'm told it is morning and night. But again, it
depends. I've got the schedule I got from the GP yesterday, and it says start at night to start with, because they're not sure how you'll go during the day. And it says a couple of drops, which is a multiple of 20 points or whatever. A joint, if you smoke one, Don, is about 160 or 150 calibrations or whatever you call it. So this is about 7 times less potent than smoking a joint. But because you keep doing it consistently, it has that build-up effect.
How are you going to manage the driving part?
That's a very good question, and I've asked that. I said, I'm right into this, but the only problem I have is about the driving.
Yep.
So I have a prescription, a medically supplied prescription from the doctor. And I would think that if you're driving erratically, just like you are if you had too much to drink, but if you've driving erratically and you pull, if you were just doing nothing and you stopped at a random breath test, I've got a feeling it's a risk, but I got a feeling to say, look, I've got this medical marijuana prescription. And they say, well, you're not doing anything. I'm not sure how that works, Mark. That's the only problem I have with it, because if someone like me gets sprung, that's just on the front of the page of the paper.
Yes, yeah, so one solution to that is
drive.
Well, and don't drive. A or B, take CBD only, which
CBD only.
Mentioned there's three.
Hasn't got the hallucinatory.
Doesn't have the THC in it, and that's default.
That's what the test measures.
Yeah,
the roadside test.
So there's two compounds: THC, CBD. And the THC is the one that's associated with.
Could I ask what?
Please,
Don. What pain have you got?
I have got ankle pain.
Is that the only pain?
A little bit of arthritis and wrist and thumb and back a little bit. Really.
Do you find the pain debilitating?
It's some of it is. But
so do you sleep better if you take an opiate or something?
Never take any drugs at all.
Anti-inflammes?
Never take nothing. And so I don't like taking sleeping tablets, and I don't like taking painkillers because it's not that bad, but it is my ankle gives me buttery.
So why are you trying this?
Because I either have surgery on my ankle because it is so sore, or this won't fix my ankle, but it might just not have me in pain with it. I have to – every other part of me except my brain is okay. I put up with it, but – my ankle is
Mark, can't walk properly. You're a sportsman, former sportsman. Do you use it?
No, I don't. I haven't got any pain at this stage, touch wood. It'd be really interesting to to put on hold this rod and come back and see in 6 weeks whether or not it's making a difference, because
we'll get
it's
you on
not
the
for
line.
Everybody. I keep saying this, it's not for everybody.
We'll get you on the line down the track and we'll tell you about it. Yep.
So it's about $300 a month.
Yep.
$10 a day.
Give or take. Yes.
Yep. So it's but mind you, Don, I'm not sure what price you put on your health. That's an old saying. If it does someone some good, but that's the beauty of having a trial with it. Now,
there's roughly 45,000 patients in the country.
Oh, are they?
45,000, and the prediction is that they'll become 150,000 by 2025. So it's not no longer on the fringes.
So were you poached to get out of the AFL system, or did you'd had enough of the AFL system and you thought, I'm looking for another direction in life?
Yeah,
how did you get into this and why?
Well, the founders are based in WA, and during lockdown they always wanted it to be a Melbourne-based business because sport is our thing. We are trying to be the number one medicinal cannabis company for sports-related chronic pain. And everybody, you know, we're getting older, so sport is the thing that separates us from others, together with the trial. And therefore it needed to be headquartered in Melbourne, the sporting capital of the world. The research is at La Trobe Uni, which has got a well-regarded sports medicine faculty. And they asked me, do you know, can you help us with a few things during lockdown? And we need a CEO who's either got a pharmaceutical background or a sports background. So I started referencing, giving him a few names of friends of mine, because I love the job. I've never had more fun working than when I did with the Coaches Association. But I'd been there for 6 years.
Really?
Yeah, and then come
working
around Christmas.
The coaches.
Yeah, come to Christmas, they sort of said, listen.
Oh, the coaches, not the umpires.
Coaches, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
They sounded me out, and one thing led to another, and I thought, you know what, this is good timing.
This might be a long bow, but can you see if this is a success that AFL clubs might treat pain or...
No question.
Clubs might embrace it.
Unquestionably. The law, it's happening overseas already for professional athletes. The law provides CBD only, this gets a bit technical, the doors have been, we have a green light to prescribe over-the-counter CBD-only products.
So they're not THC. Performance enhancing?
Yes.
So much, yep.
And I've spoken to the heavies at the AFL about this. However, nobody's yet registered a CBD-only product. So there's a year or two for that to happen. That'll be a game changer. When you can walk into to a pharmacy and over-the-counter ask for, I'm in pain, and they can offer you an option to
opioids,
to anti-inflammatories.
Yep.
That'll be a game changer, and I'm led to believe there's nothing stopping anyone now using that for pain relief, subject to there being no THC, and that's the risk at the moment. You know, that's easier said than done. So I think, once again, I go back to, in answer to your question, I'll rephrase it a little bit. I got involved because I thought, right, this is at base camp, and in 10 years' time, the landscape, the industry will have changed, and, you know, it will be something that athletes are able to use, subject to... With approval of WADA, it's happening overseas. The legislation will have changed in Australia, and for some people, it'll become much more mainstream. So it's an exciting time to be in it. And I'd been involved in coaching, running the coaches for 6 years, and you know the seventh year was going to be not as good as the first couple here.
The anti-inflammatories, there's a number of anti-inflammatories, and my theory is that you've got to find the one that's compatible with your metabolism. We're going through a thing, COVID, at the moment, and there's different vaccines out there. Is it the same with your product, that there are other manufacturers and there are different strengths or mixtures or formulas?
Yep.
So one could be better than the other? Is there a consistency right throughout?
So there's roughly 190 of them at the moment. Every one of them... different. Ours is the one we're about to start the trial with, is our own formula. Our partner has a patent over it. It's a balanced product, but it's like the secret herbs and spices. Yes, it's ours and ours alone. The challenge will be to differentiate it from everybody else, because as you just said, you know, there's not a lot of we can't advertise. And it's quite a cluttered environment at the moment. So what we're trying to do is invest heavily in this research to differentiate it and see if it works, if it's appropriate for athletes, because that'll be those two things are going to separate us from our competitors.
You said you can't advertise. Why not?
absolutely. Even I'm almost certain what I'm talking to you about today, in one way or another, violates the Therapeutic Goods Administration. It's strictly forbidden. Anything to do with medicinal cannabis is not to be advertised. So
is that like just an old school phobia that they're worried because we think we associate cannabis with something illegal? Is that, why is that?
Oh, it's a good. I don't know the answer, but I do know that it's heavily regulated, and I'm very cautious about what I say. So please don't edit this bit out. It's not for everybody. There are side effects, and you should see a GP.
No, we don't edit anything out. Once you say it, it's in. I've just lost my train of thought. I was going to ask you about. Oh, man. Sorry, I've lost it. I was just going to ask you about. I'm sorry, can't think of what I was going to ask you.
So, how many competitors have you got at the moment? Is there a, what's the sort? What's the market like?
There would. I think at our end of the spectrum, there's about 8.
Can we invest?
Well, we are planning an IPO, subject to the market being in a good spot by the end of the year. In which case, yeah, you can.
I know what I was going to ask you. So, what's the governance or control over people just getting the stuff and just having 10 drops and just zonking himself out deliberately and using it as a just sort of bastardizing the whole program and using it as a recreational drug option?
Yeah, well, I...
Because if they order too much of it over a month, you'll say, hang on a minute, you're abusing
it. I think that risk is similar to abusing opioids, I'd imagine. And that's why, and B... GPs, and you will have had your consultation, they're pretty thorough and robust and comprehensive to make sure it's a right fit. And as I say all the time, it doesn't fit for everybody. So,
but they couldn't stop me.
If you were going back regularly, I think it comes back on the GP.
They say you're ordering too much and we're stopping you.
I'll tell you one thing. The industry's looking for soft gels as the next thing. So you get the drip and you might squeeze a little bit harder that's a little bit subject to human error. So it'll be a bit tighter when the soft gels are in the market. But you're right. It is, you know, it's...
What is a soft gel? What do you do?
Oh, you know, you get a bucket little...
I understand what a soft gel is. What, do you put that under your tongue or do you rub it?
It's a regulated
dose. Yeah, you swallow it and it's a regular dose rather than squirting it under your tongue.
Oh, okay.
And it is the same as... Because if you buy Dispirin or Aspirin or OxyContin... You can overdose on that. You can have as many as you like, but you do have to get a prescription for the stronger ones. Yep. And then they stop you getting them, your doctor, because they say, you're getting too many of them.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. So
just, I don't know if you have any comment about your AFL career or about what do you think, did you get jack of the system or did you just, this was just too good an opportunity or have you bemused by what's going on in the competition and the...
I love what's going on in it. I've got two boys playing in the AFL and another one at the Eagles seconds team. So, an answer to your question, it's a wonderful industry, and I felt like this is going to be a wonderful industry as well. And I'm lucky enough to be able to go and watch my boys play, and you know, get a fix and have an insight and in that others may not have. In fact, definitely don't have. So, I wasn't sick of it at all. But there's this principle of marginal utility. I want you to hang on.
Marginal utility.
Jeez, what's this one?
It's an economic principle, right? Yes. So the seventh bit of chocolate cake is not as good as the first.
Yep.
A man digging ditches gets to 8 hours and he can dig a square metre of dirt, and then by the ninth hour he's down to, you know, half a square metre of dirt, and it's the marginal utility of paying him diminishes to the point where it's not worth it. Funnily enough, I know I'm off the target here, but talking to coaches, I remember discussing this with a couple of the veterans and a few of the big guns in business, and they all have this ability to delegate because they recognise after 9 or 10 hours of, you know, either working at a footy club or working in a corporation, you know, you're just not as good as the first few. And in the case of the big businessmen, they say, in actual fact, my 10th or 11th hour is better off at home looking at, you know, making sure I'm connected to my children and if I'm married to my partner and you know, getting a bit of balance. And I've seen this, a trap for the younger coaches is they work and work and work and think that's a good idea, and it takes them a little while to work at it. So in my case, I've been in footy for, at the periphery, by the way, for a long while, and I felt as though the next couple of years, this is an exciting job to do. I'm lucky to still be able to go and watch the footy with a personal interest.
You weren't on the periphery. You played 32 games for North, and you were the CEO of the Richmond Football Club for
3 years.
I was going to say four. In the
with the late Danny Frawley.
Well, yes, when they weren't at their greatest success, but you what
came third you, 1 year we got
prelim
in, yeah beat flogged by Brisbane in the prelim.
Okay,
and you talk about fun like Richmond in those days, my goodness. So first of all, I was really young, and in hindsight it was, you know, I was ill equipped to do the job, but being on top of or somewhere associated with Richmond in 2001, you know, making the prelim with a guy like Spud, who was just such a fun-loving
effervescent.
Yeah, you know, some of them are all measured and serious, but Spud was how good is this, and wonderful person. So yeah, that was as good as you could get. I remember we beat Carlton in a qualifying or one of the second round final, and there was 90,000 people, and it was then up to Brisbane, and it was anyway. So look, footy's I'm not telling you guys anything. It's the highs are unreal. The lows,
cyclical, isn't it?
It is, and you know when you. But I used to find, in a macabre sense, that the lows, they're good too, because without them you don't appreciate. For example, I mean, as a parent watching Melbourne over the last 5 or 6 years with my son, they had a wonderful year in 2018, and so did he, by the way. And then it was followed by a couple of terrible years, and you know we all know how it is. And you know, enduring that is there's something noble in sitting in and hanging in there. And now they seem to be going well, and so it's uplifting. I've never worked in an industry where there's more passion, and I'm talking about marketing and accounting staff. The good clubs, Sam, capture that unique commitment and spread it across the periphery of the staff, the receptionists, and the people that are the further away from the footy, and make them feel as though they're part of the club. And when that happens, you know, it's wonderful.
On that, and onto your coaching role that you had, don't you think that football clubs need to change the way that they value coaches, so that it's not all the emphasis isn't placed on the head coach?
Yeah.
So, for instance, we can have a panel where you might be a strategic coach. You know, for instance, what Dean Laidley was when he was coach. He was you would know because I think you were involved
board,
at that time.
Yep. Yeah.
So I think the I guess the feeling was that he was fantastic on match day. Didn't quite enjoy the stuff during the week or the media stuff. So therefore, if he'd been placed as the head strategy coach, say, and we really value that, and then you might have the opposite to that with, say, Brendan McCartney, who was seen as a great development coach, but maybe not as good on match day, you know. But we just need to, and then maybe an older head becomes the head coach, but we just got to value more than just the head coach, so that you don't have everybody aspiring to be head coach when it's probably not for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. They all say that there's, I mean, look at Collingwood at the moment. All the focus, well, Eddie's gone, and so the focus now is chiefly on Nathan. And he'll tell you that when it was going well, there were other people around him that were without him.
Yeah,
without
like them. Eddie.
Yeah, well, but also, you know, Robert Harvey and those sorts underneath. Now the focus. So look, you go in with your eyes wide open. There is nowhere to hide when you're the senior coach and you're losing.
Well,
nowhere.
So you'll find this. Coaching, it's pretty overrated coaching, as on they run out on the ground. A coach is just a passive onlooker on game day. He can snatch the phone up and say, move someone. But seriously, anyone with any football nous would see the moves to make. It's getting people to play for you, not in spite of you, isn't it? And do you think a coach seriously has a use-by date? He can stay too long at a club. And my great theory a couple of years ago is they should all rotate. Chris Scott should go to North Melbourne. His brother should go down to Geelong, and Nathan should go over to Essendon. The Essendon coach, Worsfold, should go to Collingwood. There'd be nothing wrong with all that.
Get back to your cake analogy.
Yeah, look, I've got great sympathy for that. I mean, John Longmire said to me when I first got the job, 90% of his work is done off the field and elsewhere. And I'll give you an example of that. So there's a young fellow who was drafted with one of my sons. His dad got really crook and passed away with cancer just prior to the draft. Oliver Florent is his name. And he's a hell of a good player. And there was, you know, do we take this young man from his family after his dad's passed and take him to Sydney and so forth? So Swans are a fabulous club. Anyway, the connection that he had with John, and this is, I'm not letting a secret out of the bag here because it's quite reasonably well known, is the young fella found it hard in the first couple of months and got home one day and was hadn't drunk enough water and, you know, found himself in a bit of stuff. The first person he rang at midnight was John Longmire. Now, you guys know footy better than I do. The big barrel, big horse is a big man. He's a baritone voice, and the coach is way, way at the pecking order. And I know through my sons, you know, you have a bit to do with the coach, but you've got welfare and development coaches and all the others. A lot. But the fact that that young man needed to, and that the first person he called was John, even with a guy like Dennis Carroll, who is his, used to be working for the Swans and was a wonderful welfare guy, suggests to me that that's why the Swans have been a perennially good side. And I agree with you. Occasionally they get sick. Well, guess what? Someone else steps in and they win. Darren Crocker's done it four or five times at North over the journey, and he's got a bloody good win-loss record because the work's done off-season and during the week. And the clubs that do that well, and I can speak...
It's the culture.
It's culture. And the best clubs have got a culture where everybody feels like they're part of the team, whether you're, a bookkeeper or a receptionist. And the players understand that it's actually not about you, it's about the supporters and the fans and the football club. And... You hear Hardwick talking about this, you know, the wonderful joy that... I'll give you an example. I know I'm BSing a little bit here, but I took the boys back home a few years ago. Now, you guys know John Todd, the name John Todd. Yep, he was a superstar in WA footy. Won the Sandover medal at the age of 16 in the 50s.
Yep.
Think about that. And he turned 17 halfway through the year. And he told the story he said, I played as a 15-year-old and we won the reserves grand final. And the seniors won, and they had a big thing the next day at Fremantle Oval. And he said, I just, as a 15-year-old, he said, I realised how much it meant to people. And that's the message, I think, the footy clubs, they are temporary. It's actually the supporters of the club that are more important. I remember Graham Moss saying this to me when I was at Claremont. It's not about you, mate. It's about the fans. And if you get that right, and you get a huge... uplift, as my son Angus did when the Demons got up and about and people were just, the ground was full. He talked about walking out into the ground one, the first final against the Hawks. I told him to get there early, weren't sure about the crowd, and he said he walked out to walk around and kill a bit of time, looked out and the MCG's empty, but he walked out under the MCG members and it was heaving and they saw little Nathan Jones's bald head and the crowd went berserk and they turned around and thought, oh my goodness, and you know, that's missing and they crave that and the good clubs... Everybody feels as though they're part of that, not just the captain and the players, it's the whole club. And that's leadership, Sam. So you're right. It's a tough job. Nathan's enduring it at the moment. And it's not, of course, it's not all his fault, the stuff that's going on. I mean, I'm sure he'd love to have some of those players back playing for him, and that those decisions are not his. But he knows, and they all know, Rod, when you get the job, it becomes a lonely place. And so the Coaches Association's purpose, in my view, was to help them to become world-class leaders, which is... Don't be in a hurry to... I can remember Woosha saying this, John Worsfold. Don't be in a hurry to get your first job because it'll probably be your last. So take your time, learn how people manage difficulties and challenges because the footy, really, the technical stuff is the least important.
Well, this is by no means disrespect for anyone that's there at the minute, or it probably is, but they'll rue the day, Collingwood, that they moved Eddie on for whatever reason. If the top office is strong, and I don't know about Mr. Corder or what, but I tell you what, they'll rue the day they moved him on, and I don't think it's a coincidence that he's not there and they're not there. Anyhow, that's only a personal opinion. No, a friend of mine, I just say that.
I can respond to that by saying, once again, I had a ringside seat for 6 years at every club. The ones that succeed... Peggy. Okay, let's talk about Peggy.
Yep.
I think she's magnificent. Right? And during my time at Richmond, if you'd have said to me... A Kentucky woman, Neil Diamond, lawyer, who knows nothing about footy, was going to become our president and reign over an era. I thought I would have just laughed you out. But she's a perfect illustration. Now, of course, Brendan Gale's a good CEO. Yep. It helps to have have Dusty Martin and a wonderful team. But if you haven't got an alignment, and James and I used to try, you know, it's our mantra at North Melbourne, if you aren't aligned... and comfortable parking your ego and saying, right, this is my part of the puzzle, helping and keeping everybody honest and supporting. You've got no hope. And every time I look at the really good clubs, it is no coincidence that the late Frank Costa was a wonderful example of that. I mean, when we were on the board at North, the way the dignity and the tough sort of strength that he and the presence he had reminds me of the way Peggy handles Richmond at the moment. And it's consistent with all the very good clubs, well led.
Spoke to his daughter last night. She rang me about... my situation, and I spoke to her yesterday, so Frank was fantastic. Now, Mark, finishing this, my sister, who's 80, she's 80, she's 12 years, she's 87.
Yep.
She is racked with pain. I've got her into the, onto the,
Emerald Clinic?
In there, and she's going to, so I'll give you an update on her. If it works for her, I'll tell you what, mate, I'll sing it to the treetops. Yeah. So she, it's a last resort for her. She is absolutely buggered.
Well, do you know that 80% of medicinal cannabis prescriptions in Australia are for chronic pain?
Yep, that's her.
And the majority are old ladies.
That's her. So I, as a result of having my first consultation, when the doctor, Dr. Francis, told me that, I said, my God, have I got a candidate for you? So I'll give you some updates on her when she gets it. So she's about a week and a half away from getting the stuff. So now, Mark, thank you very much for coming in, and it's been very interesting. Don, hasn't it?
I'm fascinated because I believe in natural therapies. I use some on the horses, the rescue remedies and whatever else, and so no placebo effect there, and very interesting, very fascinating.
Yeah,
you give the horses some.
You give them rescue remedy. Do you know what a rescue remedy is, boys? Yeah. It's made up of herbs and whatever else, and you just put it under the tongue, and it just helps you relax.
The slabibo.
What's in it?
Oh, I wouldn't have a clue. It is a natural. It's all natural. It's all mixed up.
Amongst ourselves, yeah. Mark's a very busy man. He's running a company. He's about to set one up. Unlike us. Thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome.
How is your father?
So my dad is... Ian? No, let me tell you that story about his cricket. You got another minute? Or
we got
all the time you like.
So he... the story goes that this is in 1967, and WA are playing Victoria at the Wacker Ground. The great Graham McKenzie was our opening bowler, but it fell away horribly. And the Victorians came over with a team full of test cricketers, batsmen in the main. And the word crossed the Nullarbor that Victoria had in mind breaking the world record for a first innings score, which they set against New South Wales in 1910 or whatever, and it was 1,021 runs. That's the word that floated across the Nullarbor. And the WA blokes picked up on this. Anyway, the ABC commentator, very, very parochial, imagine a far outreach ABC, said to them, listen to this. And you guys will remember the ABC would break in the afternoon session. Welcome, listeners from on the Eastern Seaboard, with news that Victoria's fallen short of its pursuit of the world record by 922 runs, and Ian Brayshaw has taken 10 wickets for 40, all 10 for 44.
So they're out for 99?
It was 100 and something or other. But anyway, it was a rout.
How many have ever taken 10?
He's
10?
The third best Australian performer in that regard.
Sheffield
someone's
level.
Taken 10, but for 38.
Two
or
other, in the 30s. And
it's extraordinary.
Yeah, so he, and his biorhythms, my mate Alex Ashenko is into this stuff. Yes. The Russian reckons biorhythm. Somebody rang him and said, mate, this was the greatest day of your life. Your biorhythm, every single thing was at an all time peak, according to the old man. And he just, and I met the late Slug Jordan, and he said he was one of them, and and Laurie reckons he wasn't out, and it was, it's great. I mean, it's very rare.
Thank you very much. I should just mention that while you've suffered a tragedy in your family life, and we unfortunately went to your sister's funeral some years ago, and so you know what it's about. So I should have mentioned that. I made a point of saying everyone goes through some sort of tragedy in their life, and it's tough, but you've been through it, so we appreciate you.
I do, Sam, and when you asked me, I thought, you know what, it's good. I found the busier you become, the better.
Yep.
And the other thing I learnt was that people are a generation above me, and particularly within the footy community. Footy was magnificent. I don't know if you've found the same thing.
Fantastic.
But the older people, straight on the phone. Mark, I've heard about your sister. How are you going? You know, like nothing shy or timid about it. Bingo. And I've learnt that lesson because you grieve, but you've got to be active and busy, and you should accept the approaches from your friends. And I found that the older people who'd lived a bit more life were more comfortable offering that, and
you're
I accepted
spot
it.
Spot on, mate. I couldn't tell you the number of people that have reached out to me. Seriously, I'm okay when I don't speak about it. I've told Donnie's a deal earlier on in the show because we weren't speaking about it. Anyhow, mate, really appreciate you coming in. Don, good.
Fascinating.
You're fascinating. Really,
no, it fascinates me, and I hope it gets going because I'd love to get off the anti-inflammatories and the opioids, but at the moment,
I'll keep you abreast of how it's going.
Well, that's right. What's this? To be continued. Yeah. See you later, gents.
Thank you, mate.
Thanks.